amazing. How do we do such godlike things on the radio? Wow. Amazing. It's brain damage on WUSB. Stony Brook. We'll be taking phone calls on other things here on the radio. And we have a special bonus for those of you that are trying to get through now but cannot. Keep listening. Dear Christian, I have heard the message of salvation many times. We are all sinners, and we can have forgiveness and eternal life if we confess and accept Jesus as Savior and Lord. I have heard that there can be no morality outside of God's laws, and that no one can be truly good without being transformed by the Spirit. I have also heard that there is no peace, love, understanding, joy, or meaning without Christ. Christians feel that unbelievers are empty slaves to carnality and selfish pride, unable to grasp truth, and must humble themselves before God's plan. I have heard that the Bible contains the inspired Word of God, a message of ultimate importance, and that many scholars claim to have proven its uniqueness and reliability. Some Christians say that they have verified the truth by personal experience. This is all very interesting. I want the best for my life. If there is an eternal paradise, I would hate to miss it. And I would definitely would not want to roast in a literal hell. It would be unwise to ignore something like a God, especially one who takes interest in my life. I would ask 1,000 questions of an all-knowing mind. You and I breathe the air of the same planet, and truth should be the same for us both. The basic question which should be asked about any religion is it true? If the basic claims of theism, sin, miracles, and revelation are true, then maybe your good news is truly good. However, I am an unbeliever. It's not that I particularly want to doubt, it's just that I have no choice. I have examined your claims, and I am not convinced that they are true. I may even wish them to be true, or I may not, but I am not so naive to think that something can be true or false just because I desire it. There must be some reason beyond wishful thinking. I'm sure you agree. You certainly doubt that thunder is caused by the anger of Zeus, or that Allah is the one true God. Like myself, you see them as myths created to explain the unknown, to give life some kind of meaning, to enhance culture, or to empower the ruling class. They are born in human imagination and can be explained without reference to a supernatural world. There are many gods which Christians reject. I just believe in one less God than you do. The reasons that you might give for your atheism toward the Roman gods are likely the same reasons I would give for not believing in Jesus. You and I are alike. We have minds which perceive, analyze, integrate, and react. Our only difference in this regard is that you have judged or assumed the premises of your religion to be factual, while I have not. You would not want to commit yourself to an idea of which you were not convinced. Would you? You are welcome to try to convince me that Christianity is true, but you should know that I am not going to just believe by faith. I will demand substantiation. If you say that the Bible is reliable, I will ask you to prove it. I may ask why the Bible contains so many errors and contradictions. If you are not familiar with the findings of critical Bible scholars with diverse points of view, I will view your conclusions with suspicion. Neither will I believe because millions of others do. Truth is not determined by vote. If it were, the earth would still be flat. I will ask if your conclusions are logical. If you want me to consider your beliefs, then be ready to tackle questions like these. Is there a higher judge of truth than reason? After centuries of bitter religious fighting, why is your mind suddenly blessed with a true way of thinking? What is morality, and is it possible without a deity? Is the violent history of the church consistent with a message of love? What is a contradiction, and what would the Bible have to say in order to be discrepant? Why did your God create evil? Is there anything wrong with skepticism? Why should inner religious experience point to anything outside the mind? Historians must assume natural regularity over time, so how can the Bible be completely historical when it contains miracles, which violate nature? What is a God, exactly? And why do you think one exists? What could be said about Christianity which, if true, would make it false? If you can't answer that question, then your conclusions may be based on something other than honesty. You can't expect me to respectfully listen to you if you are closed to a full, honest inquiry. If you are unwilling to allow, theoretically, that you might be wrong. I am open-minded and willing to change my position, if warranted. Can you also be fair enough to follow the facts wherever they lead? If you have new concrete evidences or rational arguments, then I will be glad to hear them. But please don't waste my time preaching the same old sermons I've been hearing for years. I'm quite happy with life. I have purpose and peace of mind. I prefer goodwill over repentance. I don't want to die, but I accept death as natural. I sense no need to worship, confess, or apologize to anyone. I feel no guilt, and therefore no desire to be saved from anything. Sin is a primitive idea, and salvation is religion's offer to solve a problem of its own making. I happily admit I am a skeptic, and I am proud of the way I think. Although humans are not perfect, I respect the human mind, and I am optimistic about our abilities to continue to solve life's problems with reason and kindness. Well, occasionally you get them to end just on the right point. That was a non-tract number one, in fact, from 1987, Freedom from Religion Foundation. And I don't know if they're still at P.O. Box 750 in Madison, Wisconsin, 53701, but if they are, maybe they'll respond if you write to them there. Entitled Dear Christian, and I imagine this was handed out at various religious organizations, gatherings, and everybody thought it was a regular religious tract until they started reading it, and then they wanted to look for the perpetrator, and they found they were long gone. I've seen that happen, too, at religious gatherings of various sorts. All kinds of, and don't even bother asking why I show up at these religious gatherings of various sorts. I just try to show up everywhere. You'll see me in the weirdest places. But you'll see these people handing out things, and you think that they belong there, but actually they don't belong there. They're infiltrating. And they hand you something, and you read it, you look at it, you glance at it, and you say, wait, this person actually has a brain. And then you look around to see where the person went, and they're gone. Because they know most people would look upon having a brain as a potentially dangerous thing. So you got to move fast when you have a brain, and fortunately having a brain allows you to do that. Well, brain damage is here, and this is Eric. I am back after 2 weeks. Thanks very much to Matt for filling in over the past couple of weeks while I was in Amsterdam and various other points over in the European continent. I have something interesting to share. This is something I wasn't supposed to get because I'm supposedly a citizen of the country, so I'm not supposed to get these things, but I took it anyway on my way in, you know, back to the country. First of all, on the way to Holland, you would expect them to even look at your passport, but they don't do that anymore. You know, you just walk into the country and they just wave and say hi and that's it. They don't even look at your passport. The only person that looked at my passport was an airline clerk. I don't know. It's just getting too easy to travel these days. And then on the way back in, I was expecting to be hassled, but they wouldn't even oblige me here in this country. Because every time I come into this country, I have all kinds of questions thrown at me. But this time, they didn't want to know anything. I don't know. It's a shame when your own country loses interest in you, you know, and stops thinking of you as a national threat. But I guess that's just, the nature of things. It's the 90s, what can you say? Anyway, On the way back, I picked up this thing that's for foreigners. Only for foreigners, not for citizens. We're never supposed to see this. It says, "Welcome to the United States." But that's not all it says. It says a lot more than that. This is a little pink form. It's called a Visa Waiver Pilot Program Information Form. And it's put out by the U.S. Department of Justice, Immigration and Naturalization Service. You're supposed to read this, complete it, sign it, and make sure that everything is in order. Now, to apply for admission into the United States under the Visa Waiver Pilot Program of the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986... you have to meet the following criteria, and folks, listen very carefully. You have to have a valid passport from a participating country. I don't know what a participating country is, but I'm sure there's lots of them. You have to be a national of a participating country, which is an important way of saying be a citizen. You have to seek entry as a non-immigrant visitor for 90 days or less, preferably much less. Have a round-trip, non-transferable transportation ticket issued by a participating carrier which is valid for 1 year and is non-refundable except in the country of issuance or of your nationality or residence. Not have violated conditions of previous admissions. Not be, this is the good one, folks, ready? Not be excludable from the U.S. on such grounds as being afflicted with contagious diseases or mental illness. A narcotics addict or trafficker. Convicted of crimes, any crimes will do, deported from the U.S., or a member of communist organizations. That's right, even today, being a member of a communist organization is enough to keep you from entering the United States. And how about this one? Not be a threat to the welfare, health, safety, or security of the U.S. How do they tell when you get off the plane if you're going to be a threat to the welfare, health, safety, or security of the entire damn country? That's something that I'd sure like to know how they're able to tell that. When you do this, when you fill out this form, you waive all rights of review or appeal of admissibility determination made by an immigration officer and all rights to contest action and deportation, except for asylum. We'll get into that later. But it's kind of weird. I mean, if the only way you can get in is to waive all rights and waive the right to appeal, when do people appeal? Because if you can't appeal whenever you come into the country, and the only way to get into the country is to waive all right, I don't know. It's confusing to me. Now, there are 33 grounds for exclusion from the United States. That's true. 33 grounds. So bear this in mind. Some of the grounds for exclusion relate to those afflicted with contagious diseases, like tuberculosis. They give tuberculosis as an example. They do not give AIDS as an example, even though they are using AIDS as an excuse to keep people out of the country. Mental illness, those who are mentally handicapped. People who are mentally retarded are not allowed to come into this country. So it's incredible. And when I tell you some of the comparisons that I can show to other countries, I think you'll find this rather disturbing. Yeah, disturbing is a nice, calming word. Another ground for exclusion is if you were ever arrested, convicted for any offense or crime, if you are believed to be a narcotic addict or a trafficker, just believed to be. Not proven or anything like that. They just have that look about you, you know? If you've been deported from the United States within the last 5 years, if you have been a member of a subversive or communist organization, if you were in any way connected with the persecution of others in association with the Nazi government, that's an interesting one. If you are seeking to perform skilled or unskilled labor. And finally, the last of the 33 grounds that they list, they don't list all 33 of them. If you are seeking to engage in criminal or immoral activities. That's right, folks, you've got to be moral to enter the United States. If you come in here to do anything slightly off the beaten path, better think twice, or just pick another country. That's what I learned on the way back in. I mean, this is incredible. This little pink form is quite valuable to me because it tells a lot. You know, whenever they ask you on the airplane, you know, what country are you coming from? You know, are you a United States citizen or are you someone from another country? Well, you can lie to them. It doesn't matter. They're not going to check up on you, so you get more forms that way. And if you're in the airport and you see these interesting little forms lying around for foreigners, pick them up. There's no crime. You can pick up whatever you want. And you learn all kinds of things you're probably not supposed to learn. So that's a story as far as that goes. Now, speaking of deportation and things like that, well, we've all heard about what's going on with the Haitian refugees. U.S. Supreme Court saying that they have to go back. Ruling, I believe it was either yesterday or the day before. I've been kind of in a trance the last couple of days, so I'm not really sure. But it's basically all the news organizations and our beloved Associated Press is no exception. They've made up this nice little word for sending all these people back to the place that they tried to flee. They're calling it repatriation. Repatriating. That sounds so nice. It sounds like, hey, we're doing these Haitians a favor. We're putting them back with their beloved homeland and not sending them back to almost certain torture and all kinds of other wonderful things that happen in military regimes. They take a dim view of people that try to leave. Now, I don't know how many of these thousands of Haitians had the chance to prove whether or not they were leaving for economic reasons or political reasons, but I somehow don't think any of them were given that chance. I think they were dealt with en masse, and everybody pretty much had to go as one group of people. Anyway, let's see what the Associated Press had to say only moments ago on our ticker outside. With the repatriation of some of the Haitian refugees held at a U.S. base in Cuba now underway, activists in Miami's Little Haiti are denouncing the move as racist and say the returnees will be killed. The head of the Haitian Refugee Center in the city says it's clear the U.S. doesn't want blacks in the country. Roland Durancy appealed to blacks, to Jews who have faced discrimination, to Latinos, and to liberal whites who believe in freedom and justice for all to support the Haitians. I say let's appeal to everybody. Black, white, conservative, liberal. You know, let's have some common sense here, folks. And take a look at the picture. Don't lump everybody together. And read up on what's going on in Haiti now and see if it's an oppressive situation or not. Something that people might not want to hang around to see how it all turns out. I don't know why people would be coming here for economic upturns, because they're certainly not going to find very many of them. I think people might be coming here because there's a chance that they can be free here. But that chance seems to be getting dimmer every day. The head of the U.S. Haitian operation at Guantanamo Bay Naval Base says finding Haitians willing to return to their homeland wasn't much of a problem at all. Marine Brigadier General George Walls Jr. says they realized that not all of them were going to get to go to the U.S. Officials say 150 volunteers who are heading back tonight aboard a Coast Guard cutter were tired of life at the tent city where they had been kept. Officials say more refugees will be taken back to Haiti tomorrow. Of course, I believe it was about 10,000 of them all together, so 150 people going back. I don't know how much of a dent that's going to put into everything. So that's the story as far as that goes. That's been rather disturbing to me over the last couple of days. Okay, I know we have a lot of phone calls out there. I know there's people that are frustrated that they can't get through. So what we've done is, we've got our phone number, 632-6901, but what we're going to do as a special favor to those people to allow a couple more of you to get in there is call another number. Call 632-6500, and that'll allow a few more people to get in so we don't have the same people with speed dialing that apparently always manage to get in before everybody else. So call either 632-6901, which I think right now you get a busy signal on, or 632-6500, which you probably now will already get a busy signal on. I don't know. We're trying our best. We're trying our best to get everybody fitted in. And we're going to get to those phone calls in just a couple of minutes. I recommend that everybody take a trip overseas at some point, whether it's summer, whether it's winter. Winter is good because things are cheaper and there aren't that many tourists. And the weather really isn't that bad. You know, I was expecting things in Amsterdam to be extremely cold, but actually it's warmer than it is here. The only major difference is that it's a lot darker. Sun doesn't come up until about 8:30, goes down at about 4:30, which is kind of depressing. As you might have heard a couple of weeks ago, I called in to the show from Amsterdam. We were able to even listen to it from there because we have an airline that we can call in on and hear what's going on over the radio. And, of course, it's 6 o'clock in the morning there now. Actually, it's 6:33, so to listen to the radio program and to be a part of it, we had to pretty much be up from 6 to 8 in the morning. And from that point on, things got extremely weird because it was then Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, and I was hanging out with these Dutch people who didn't want to go to sleep at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. So we all decided to kind of wander around town a little bit. And Sunday is not exactly a lively day in Europe. Most things are closed. They don't have 24-hour supermarkets. They don't have 7-Elevens. You know, it's hard to get things at certain times. It's hard to get things at night. That's just the way it is. It's a cultural thing. But we were trying to get back on a normal schedule, and I'll tell you, listening to this radio program 2 weeks ago was enough to destroy almost 4 complete days after that, because obviously staying up all day did not work really all that well. So we got onto this crazy night schedule where we'd wake up and the sun had just gone down, and that's the most depressing thing in the world when you do that. So you wake up and it's dark outside and you just don't know what to do. And after a while, things start closing. You know, you're waking up and things are closing. That doesn't really make you an optimist. And so then you're at your peak and there's nobody else up. And it's very hard to get out of that. It's really hard to get out of that kind of schedule. And you have to sort of do it bit by bit. And eventually what you wind up doing is just sleeping away and wasting an entire day at some point. So, yeah, listening to this radio show over in Amsterdam is a big sacrifice. So I don't know if anybody in Amsterdam is listening now, but it's quite a challenge to actually get that done. But there are so many incredible cultural differences. I've talked about this before, but I really think we should start taking a good, long, hard look at the way we do things here, because it's kind of sobering to be over there and to see people interacting and people not afraid as much as we're afraid here. And you might think that's strange. I know a lot of people do, until they go over there and see how things work in a different kind of a culture. For instance, mass transit. All right, people get onto trains. They get onto trams, which are pretty much like trolleys. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to get this piece of paper called a ticket, and you're supposed to get that at a stationery store or someplace like that, or post office. I'm not quite sure. I've never gotten one. You're supposed to get it and cancel it on the tram or train or whatever you're on. You're supposed to put it into this little machine and it goes ding and stamps the time on it. And, of course, nobody looks at the ticket to see if you've actually done that. Yeah, they have these people called ticket inspectors who travel around in packs of about 6 or 7 at a time, uniformed, so you can tell them from a mile away. And occasionally they get onto trains and then ask to see your ticket. And if you don't have a ticket, you can get a fine. Now, since they travel around in packs, people can see them coming from quite a ways. And at one particular time, they got onto a subway train that I was on, and about half of the train got off at that station and simply waited for the next one. And it's kind of the way things work there, you know? If you want to pay for your ride on the train or tram or bus or whatever, you do. If not, you take your chances. But it's not the big deal it is in New York City, where you can get shot for jumping a turnstile or thrown into jail. And then there's things like the Autobahn in Germany, where you can drive as fast as you want. And I rented a car with a bunch of other people, and we were driving really, really fast, and it's quite a feeling. And I asked, you know, I asked, well, there are a lot of, you know, a lot of drunk drivers and irresponsible people. And while there are some accidents, undoubtedly there will be accidents, it's nowhere near what you would think it would be. I mean, we're afraid of always losing control. If you take away the rules, the regulations, you're going to have anarchy. But guess what? If you take away those rules and regulations, you don't get anarchy. You get responsibility. As one person in Germany told me, here we have responsibility. In the United States, you have laws. And I think the more laws that we have, the more regulations, the more rules, the less responsible we wind up being. You know, because we expect Big Brother to be watching over us and to tell us what to do. And if we're violating some kind of law, we'll know it right away. But we don't think to ourselves, are we doing the right thing? I mean, over there, you know, you're not aware of all the different things that you have to be aware of here. For instance, the drinking age. You're not aware of that. I don't even know what the drinking age is. Nobody mentioned it. Nobody seems to be concerned with it. If people want to drink beer, they drink beer, period. It's no big deal. And same thing for all kinds of things. I mean, I could list this for a couple hours, but I just get everybody upset at me for taking up all the time. It's the same thing with nudity, for instance. You can walk through a supermarket and see copies of Playboy on the magazine rack inside a supermarket. And not only that, our copies of Playboy here cannot show nudity on the front cover. They can show pictures of people inside who are nude, but they can't show the actual nudity there. But they show it on the front page. And it's just sitting there in a supermarket, and little kids walk by, and, you know, they don't, their lives don't fall apart. You have the red light district of Amsterdam, and people walk up and down the street, and, you know, there's hookers just standing in the window, you know, showing off their wares. And nobody falls apart. Life goes on. Same thing with words. You know, those nasty words that everybody makes such a big fuss over here in this country on TV and radio, the things you can't say. Well, guess what? They say them there. Even the BBC in England says it. They say all kinds of things. They air films uncut, the way they were meant to be, the way they were originally supposed to be. And that's true of England, Holland, Germany, and those are the only three that I saw this particular time. I don't know where we're going, folks. I don't know. But it seems like we're going backwards and they're going forwards. And I know a lot of people are heading over in that direction. And it's sad to lose people to, you know, something else when we could be making things better here. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that. We've got some news we're going to look over, but we'll do that later. Phone calls to make, phone calls to take. Again, our phone numbers are 632-6901, 632-6500. Every line on the board is lit, so let's see who's out there. And I don't want to hear any criticism about how long I've talked. I know, I've talked for what, 40 minutes? Okay. It's a talk show, I know. These things happen. Good morning. That can be construed as criticism.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, well, what's up?
This is Mr. Groovy.
Mr. Groovy, huh? Am I supposed to know you?
I don't know.
Well, I don't know you. I'm sure you're a groovy person, but I don't know you.
Of course. Spoke last week.
You were on last week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm pretty cool.
Well, that's good.
What?
I'm glad you're cool, but, you know, we've got to go beyond your coolness and, you know, get into some issues.
Well, I got to say hi to some people. I got to say hi to Blondie, and if Mark's listening, tell him to call in.
Uh-huh.
And King John.
And King John.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so what's the topic for tonight?
Well, I don't. Have you been listening at all for the last 40 minutes?
Kind of.
Okay. Well, talking about differences in cultures and you know, sending people back to the countries and various things like that.
Well, why do black people like Africa so much?
I'm sorry?
Why do black people like Africa so much?
Why do black people like Africa so much?
Yeah, like, you don't see any Irish people wearing Irish, like, necklaces and stuff.
You don't?
No.
Well, I don't know how many Irish people you know, but I see that kind of thing all the time. Shamrocks and, look, St. Patrick's Day, for God's sake. Come on, March 17th. It's coming around the corner. It's, you know, major holiday.
Yeah, well, why do black people have to wear the necklaces? I don't wear an Irish necklace, and I'm Irish. I'm Irish-American.
Well, I know people that do. I know people that wear green things all the time.
I never met someone like that.
Well, I guess you need to get out more. They're out there. There's people from every country. Italians, you know, Italian-Americans, Irish-Americans. They're all proud of their culture. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I don't think you should look at it as a threat or anything like that. It's just, you know, people are proud of where they've come from. And African-Americans have been taught to be ashamed of where they've come from in past years. So it's good to see that finally, you know, being erased.
And then Malcolm X, everyone's wearing the hats now.
What, you're talking about the Muslim hats?
Malcolm X.
Uh-huh.
This guy, you know, the black guy.
Malcolm X hats.
Yes.
Sing? They say Malcolm X on them.
They say an X.
Uh-huh.
And it means Malcolm X, and he's racist.
Well, there's a lot of racist white people, too, that people still, follow. And, you know, you can say Malcolm X is a racist or whatever. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But this is lots of racist people from all cultures.
Sure. And I got one more thing to say.
Yeah? Well, that's pretty much what I expected you to say. And I'm glad you said it, too, because it really underlined your points, let's put it that way. 632-6901, 632-6500, our telephone numbers. And, that's another thing. When I listened to that radio show 2 weeks ago, I don't know what happened. I really don't. It was embarrassing. It really was. Because there were these people calling up talking about this racist nonsense about how black people are not as developed as white people. And, you know, it's embarrassing. Here in America, we just can't seem to get off this, this topic of racism. I mean, we can't seem to get off racism, period. It just never seems to end. So it was pretty embarrassing hearing all that for 2 hours in front of these Dutch people that thought we were so cultured beforehand. But I guess that's just a way of bringing things to the forefront. 632-6901, good morning. Anybody there? Well, we don't have time for that. Good morning.
Hi. I was listening about the responsibility in the law thing.
Uh-huh.
And I agree with you.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, because the drinking age here is like 21.
Uh-huh.
And that's why all the kids go out on the weekends and get drunk and everything. Because they know that they're not allowed to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
The more you tell people not to do something, the more, of course, they're going to try to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Which is kind of self-defeating.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just out the other night with some people, a couple of whom were under age.
Uh-huh.
We weren't even going out drinking. We were just going to a place to have something to eat, and they happened to, you know, also have a bar. And they wouldn't let anybody in who was under 21 because they served alcohol, even though the person had no intention of drinking anything. And, you know, we were willing to sign an affidavit, you know, as far as that went. But they were just complete fascists about it.
Yeah, they should take a lot of the laws. Like, they shouldn't have them.
No, it's unnecessary, I think. It really is. Instead, a sense of responsibility is what we need. And we don't seem to have it. You know, over there, I was noticing this driving around, because I never drove in Europe before. But, you know, all those cars you see driving in the expressway, the Corvettes, the Camaros, all these people in cars 10 feet high that, you know, make real idiots of themselves?
Yeah.
Well, they don't have any of those over there. I can't figure it out. They I don't know where they are, but those people just don't exist.
Because they respect each other over there.
Maybe so. Maybe their parents don't spoil their kids by buying them expensive cars. Maybe they, you know, they have a different sense of values.
Yeah.
It's something. It's a revelation.
Yeah, they're more sensitive over there.
Uh-huh.
They respect each other more.
Yeah. Well, what do you think we can do to move in that direction? Do you think there's any hope for us?
I don't know. I just think that parents shouldn't teach the children, like, racism. And they should just, you know, tell them to treat people the same and stuff like that.
It's interesting because I'm sure there's racism over there. I'm sure there's lots of it. But, you know, there are quite a few things that that we do I was over there. I can't recall seeing more than one or two Dutch flags. Now, I can walk out the door here and probably see four or five right away. We are so into waving flags, and you have to wonder why that is. Is it out of guilt or something? Or, I mean, yeah, everybody's proud of their country, but we take it to the point of frenzy, you know, where we anybody that isn't proud of their country is a traitor and, you know, has to be dealt with appropriately. And that's a very unhealthy attitude to have. Another thing, in Holland, they speak many, many languages. They speak Dutch. Everybody speaks English. Everybody speaks German. And a lot of people speak other languages as well. You would think in a country like that, there would be some kind of movement to keep Dutch as the primary language. But they're not concerned. Dutch will always be there. And it's not going to be threatened in any kind of way. But here, you know, first thing I see when I come back to this country are bumper stickers saying English first. And it's like, who cares? So people speak Spanish. So people speak French. It's not going to make the country fall apart. It's only going to make things better.
Yeah.
We don't know how to speak any other languages, and there's, you know, that's kind of sad to see other people jumping from German to English to Dutch so quickly, so easily, and, you know, we can only comprehend one language, and we can barely do that. It's just, you know, it's sad. We're capable of better. You know, there's nothing wrong with our brains. We can do just as much.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I don't mean to lecture or anything like that. It's just, you know, you come back with all these impressions. And I've done this a couple of times before, but it always hits me, you know, each time.
Yeah.
Have you been over there?
No, I haven't.
Well, you should definitely go, because it's, you know, it's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah.
And it's not too expensive.
Okay.
All right, where are you calling from?
Miller Place.
All right. Well, thanks very much for calling.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
632-6901 and 632-6500. Those are our two phone numbers tonight. We have, a lot of phone lines open to everybody. As many as we can possibly fit, I guess. And let's take another phone call. Good morning.
Nope.
How you doing?
How you doing?
I'm just fine.
How's your trip to, where did you go, Holland?
Holland and Germany.
Right. Did you get any of them Dutch style pretzels?
You know, I didn't. I spent a lot of time looking for Belgian waffles for some reason, which was a big mistake because no one has them over there. What they do, they have weird things. They have these things called pancakes, which are not really pancakes. And I should warn people about this. They take up an entire plate, they're very flat, and there's only one of them. And you can get anything on them. It's like a meal in itself. But it's not like flapjacks or anything like that, so don't make that mistake. And pizza is the other thing. That they're big into pizza, but it's not anything like the kind you get here. It's much smaller and, you know, different flavor altogether. And a lot more busy on the, you know, the top of the crust.
Yeah.
But,
you get any big wooden shoes?
No, you know, I didn't see those either. You know, those are always the things that people ask about are the wooden shoes and the pretzels. And I never see those things.
So, did you get any special little things when you went on your trip?
Special little things. Well, there were a couple of special little things, but, nothing worth mentioning, I guess.
Yeah, just little knickknacks.
Little knickknacks, yeah, that's it, little knickknacks.
What was the topic you wanted to talk about tonight?
Well, I guess we're just sort of wandering around talking about American culture and various other news events, such as sending Haitians back to Haiti and what else has been going on? We've had summits, we've had State of the Union addresses, all kinds of things.
How about the cold weather we've been having?
Yeah, that's quite a topic. Well, you know, we have cold weather outside today, but we don't have any snow, and that upsets me tremendously.
I hate snow.
You hate snow. Well, then you should be very happy because every time precipitation comes along, the thermometer miraculously rises above 32 degrees Fahrenheit and we get rain instead of snow. So I don't understand why that happens all the time. But I know in Boston they got a lot of snow today.
We've had a decent amount of snow so far this year, I think.
We did?
Yeah.
Where is it? I didn't see any of it.
You away where most of it came. That's why I thought.
I heard it was about 1 inch.
Yeah, but it stuck around for a long time.
Well, believe it or not, I wasn't here for any of it, so I'm kind of upset that I missed that.
Snow. Yeah, okay. The thing that pissed me off is it's hot all week, and then today it's steaming. Well, I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's pretty cold out there, yes. I was outside for an extended period of time tonight, and I shouldn't have done that. But it's real cold. If you don't go out with gloves, you'll regret it for the rest of your life.
I was out all day today trying to get money in a bus schedule, because I was lost in Patchogue or some town like that. I don't know what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
He's in my ass.
Well, Patchogue is not the place to be without a bus, that's for sure.
True.
Yeah. All right, listen, thanks very much for calling.
Okay, kiss your dad. Make it cry, put that under between your thigh, I want some of that brain.
Right, et cetera, et cetera. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay, got through.
You sound
so,
very close.
Would you mind if I switch topics tonight?
Sure, go ahead, switch whatever you want.
Okay, let's see, it's a year since the war with Iraq.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we barely remember it. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, okay. Okay, would you mind if I, take a mildly twisted view for a second?
Hey, the more twisted, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, we got to vote for George Bush, hey?
Okay, why do we have to vote for George Bush?
Hey, we got to have more wars like this.
They are entertaining, that's for sure.
What's that?
They are entertaining, but we're running out of enemies.
No, not necessarily. I mean, in the news, Libya is like, it has chemical weapons, and it's producing nuclear bombs, maybe.
You think so?
Yeah, it's coming out in the news. Got to have more Operation Collateral Damages.
Hmm.
You got to do that, and this time they got to get it right. Bomb civilians, hey. I've got to kill off those West Asians as much as possible.
I'm betting on Cuba. I think we're going to try to invade Cuba at some point.
No, we got to go for it, though. And Bill Clinton, too. He would go for a war with Iraq. And Steve Solar said about a week ago or so.
A war with Iraq or a war with Libya?
Either, both. I mean, all of the above. Hey,
well, we just have
kill
to get
as many people as possible.
We just have to make it, you know, clear so we know where to send people.
Right. Well, okay. But, regardless, Stephen Solar said, if Bill Clinton was president, Saddam Hussein would be out of power. Hey, you gotta elect a president that's gonna kill as many people as possible, go to war as much as you can. Don't you agree, Eric?
Well, it's, there's elements there that I agree with, you mentioned Bill Clinton, and I believe in his existence. That's about it, I think. I can't think of anything else I have to think about it all. I saw a Lyndon LaRouche political ad tonight, and I'm just, like, kind of reeling from that still.
On this idea, I have to take, like, I guess more of the Jonathan Swift mode of these things.
Uh-huh.
My real views are probably too, subversive, I suppose.
Well, you got to be subversive at some point to be healthy. You have to raise questions and go against the system.
The one thing is that it's actually in the paper, like Bush's victory. It's worthwhile. Like going to war with Iraq last year was worthwhile. The idea of Panama is just being completely. Who cared about it? Like, there were lives lost in Panama, too.
Right, and what's come of it, you know? What has changed?
Except the evidence that it's very, very likely that the reason that Bush went to war was out of a personal gripe with Noriega.
Right, and he had personal gripe with Hussein.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that personal gripe along the lines for Noriega that he did not want to help support the contra-revolutionaries. That the personal gripe with Saddam Hussein, well, not necessarily a gripe. I mean, maybe he wanted to go to war. Maybe he figured, hey, well, it'll help me in my election in 2 years. Maybe he figured that.
You know, Bush has been winning all these battles, but...
they're somewhat rigged, but...
He's been losing at home, you know, and his popularity has plummeted as a result.
Well, the one thing I think that the lesson from the 1988 campaign, among many others, about race baiting and et cetera, is, I guess we're going to have a guy that's going to say, worship the flag. A flag is a military symbol. And
definitely.
If we're going to be doing more worshiping of this year, I think we can expect, whatever, 2.5 wars in the next few years. And in fact, I think a lot of people will be voting for, like, whatever, two more wars. Will it be North Korea and Cuba? B, Cuba and Iran? Iran and Iraq? Who will it be?
Uh-huh. And why? You know, why are we always the ones having wars? I mean, yeah, there's other wars in other places, but
it has something to do a little bit also with what kind of person Bush is in terms of how he sets these things up.
Uh-huh.
I mean, after all, he did go through great diplomatic means to try to get the war going. He He went through great diplomatic means to get elected in 1980. You may be skeptical of October Surprise and or Iran-Contra.
Well, I'd sure like to see some answers to this October Surprise, see if, you know, what the allegations are and if it's actually true.
Well, it's truly tragic. Or, for Bush supporters, truly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I mean, it's not nice to take a stand on these things because if you have an opinion, you're dangerous. But Newsweek and I think New one of the other more Republican or correct-thinking magazines viewed it was that the whole October Surprise is a hoax, and this is before Gary Sick's book came out recently.
Uh-huh. And Gary Sick is big into investigating it, actually finding out the answers, and I know he's getting a lot of opposition to that.
But my question to you, Eric, though, is what do you think about the media virtually giving a blank check to Bush? And another thing is that, like reading articles in the paper, and they'll say if Bill Clinton doesn't make it, people don't know what they'll, the Democratic establishment doesn't know what they'll do. They'll have to choose Mario Cuomo. They'll have to choose somebody else.
Uh-huh.
They'll have to choose a superstar. It can't be an actual Democratic battle between, I mean, Democratic meaning voters will have to choose. It'll have to be a media polishing battle. Why is this?
Well, the media is, it's become a horrible entity that, that seeks to make headlines and, scandalize people the first chance they get. This whole Bill Clinton affair, we could predict it, almost to the date of when it was going to come out, that somebody somewhere is going to say something against him. It's what the media lives for, but what the media should be living for is actually doing some investigative reporting on issues, and while that might be an issue in itself, I really don't think it is. If he had an affair with somebody, I mean, who the hell cares about that? How about some investigation into the October Surprise or into the SNL scandal, or
Do you think that the problems, well, not the problems, but the situations today can boil over into a crisis? Do you think that this present economy can actually lead to a possible new depression? Do you think that the U.S. role in the quote-unquote New World Order, or as Gorbachev said last year, cult of force, do you think this might lead into some major disaster?
Well, I'll say this, having just gotten back from Europe, they're moving ahead. They make changes, they have inventions that are working, that they're doing things in different ways, and we just keep staying the way we are, and anything new that's tried fails. And I think the reason for that, I've been thinking about this, why is it that, we can never really change fundamentally the way we live? I think we try to do it as an entire country. And it's very hard to move a couple hundred million people at once. I think if New York tried something different, and then, someone in Philadelphia said, hey, that works, we'll do that too. It just might work out better. But we're trying... We're weighing ourselves down with our importance.
Anything to do with it, that when it came to the war with Iraq last year, people were more than willing to volunteer to participate in a victory parade, to think that the whole thing was beautiful and not necessarily question, what was it right or wrong? It doesn't have anything to do with laws. People will be actually going for conformity naturally.
We need to inject ourselves with all of this reassurance. It's like some kind of drug that we always need a fix of. And it's really getting to the stage where we're practically terminal as far as this goes. I don't know if it's guilt. I don't know if it's we feel that we're just losing with the rest of the world. We are. We really are. We're falling behind education-wise, technology-wise, certainly standard of living-wise. When I was in Holland, I stayed in the worst part of Amsterdam because that's where my friends happen to live. They live in what's called the ghetto of Amsterdam, and it's better than most places I know of here. It's nothing like the ghettos of New York or any other city I've seen in the United States. That's unheard of. That way of life is completely unheard of. And it's crime certainly is nowhere the proportion that it is here. People don't walk around with guns over there. In some countries, even police don't walk around with guns. It's completely. I think we're losing touch with reality, is what I think. Here.
It's really important, though, also to have the skepticism that you were mentioning from the letter before. Doesn't matter whether you agree with it or not, or whether I do or not,
uh-huh.
But just the idea to have skepticism about just going along with the flow. And crime, I don't know. How you can define crime as going with the flow or not. And certainly it's a bit tragic when you have grand larceny is not necessarily being equivalent to certain lower crimes that are punished severely.
Uh-huh.
Because sometimes the grand larceny crimes can be as equally if not more detrimental to the society than maybe possibly like the classic violent crime might be.
Yeah, but there's something about violent crime that's always going to be different from, you know, economic crime, in my book, anyway. And, yeah, you should punish people for stealing, ripping people off, but it's just not the same thing as, you know, murder, rape, that kind of thing.
But you can have some of the white-collar crimes. If you didn't have them in the first place, then you might have a more equitable distribution of the income and possibly not a problem with the society.
Yeah, but I think those are the white-collar crimes that are more inbred into society, that are more way of life. And, of course, that makes it a lot harder to get rid of those crimes. You know, just like the way things are distributed from the start, the way people are granted places to live or places to go to school or jobs. You know, until that's equalized, it's always going to be, unfair.
Well, one other thing, too, is crime is certainly one of the problems of our society, many others. And I suppose maybe if you had a more, I guess, fascist society, then you can crack down on crime and all. But that's one way of approaching this weird idealism or bizarre utopia. One of the things that's a criticism for socialist or communist societies is that people say, oh, well, it's all utopian. Oh, but what about 1,000 points of light? Isn't that sort of utopian, too?
Sure.
I'm wondering if our society, working as best as it can be, is just a utopian view as the former Soviet Union might be, or even Cuba, or whatever.
It certainly could be seen that way, especially from an outside point of view.
No matter what, it's going to depend on individual responsibility. That's sort of what all the philosophies say, that it's a matter of how we choose. And it doesn't necessarily have that free enterprise, or not necessarily free enterprise, but just the present structure of might equals right. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's not utopian.
No.
Too.
If you translate the way we deal with things on an international level, I think might versus right is an accurate way of summing that up. And you translate that down to an individual level, you don't have a very positive way of life, that's for sure. You know, live and let live is the way we're supposed to live our individual lives. But I don't see that on the international scale.
Right. Ultimately, there has to be a new leadership. I think one other thing that I was thinking of is, I think in this New World Order, there may be something that might be kind of interesting coming up between now and 100 years from now or so. It might be that now that the United States is the new Rome, we might have a new Jesus Christ. And the question is, will the secret agencies like CIA or whatever catch up with the new Jesus Christ, whoever he or she might be, and bump him off first?
Well, why not? We're the equivalent of the Roman Empire, are we not?
Yes, we certainly are.
All right, well, then we're required to. I think Nostradamus would say that.
So will there be a new savior, and will that savior get very far, or will the secret agencies bump him off first?
Well, eventually the secret agencies will bump him off, but I don't believe he's due to be born for another 20 years, and I think it's Brooklyn he's coming from. That's just what I heard from an interpretation.
You think it's wacky, or are you doing a connection between Jesus Christ coming and
I got that wrong.
The Roman Empire, whether Jesus Christ was man or God or whatever?
Hold on, I got that wrong. It was not Brooklyn, I've just been told, thank you. It's Lynbrook. Lynbrook, not Brooklyn. Big mistake there.
Hey, maybe it'll be Algeria.
I don't think so. Listen, we got to go to some more calls.
Okay, nice.
Thanks for calling. 632-6901. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I have a problem. I was wondering if you could help me with it.
A problem?
Yep.
Well, Okay, we can try.
I'm 17 years old, and already I'm impotent.
Already, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just everything is a matter of phases, you know? And that means that, if you have that problem now, you won't have it another time, you see?
Yeah.
When everybody else has it. So you can deal with other things now, and I'm sure you have many other things to deal with. And then, you know, when you come to the end of that particular stage of your life, you'll be ready for those things that other people will be giving up on by that time. You understand?
Yep.
I mean, it's nothing to be all that concerned about, but I'm sure our listeners are fascinated by it.
All right. Is there anybody that can help me with this, you think?
Anybody that can help you?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not quite sure. I mean, you could seek medical advice, I suppose, but I don't know if it's really going to change much. If I may ask, how long has this been going on for?
A couple months. A
couple of months, huh? Well, you know, there's all kinds. You can look at your life and see if there's anything causing stress. Is there anything causing stress?
Not really.
Not really. Well, I imagine this would be causing stress, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So the more you worry about this, the more, you know, it's kind of a self-defeating thing there. You understand? It's the more you think about it, the worse it is.
Yeah.
So it just sort of has like a snowball effect. So try to absolve yourself of all worries and just, you know, relax and all that. And if you continue to have the problem over the next few months, I would say, you know, see somebody about it. It's not that big a deal. They usually can do something about it.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, good luck.
Bye-bye.
No, I'm not gonna preach abstinence to a 17-year-old. What, are you crazy? That's not what we're about here. We're about reality, you know, and the facts of life and all that kind of thing. Yeah, besides, he might have been talking about, you know, mental, you know, not physical problems, but, you know, mental problems. Yeah, it can happen to anybody. Mental impotence. In fact, I know quite a few people like that. 632-6901 or 632-6500. We have one line open somewhere. Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Wow, you know, I was like just debating with myself whether Christmas was going to come first or was I going to get on the air.
Well, in some parts of the world, Christmas would have come first, but not here.
Guess so. You know, I was also counting how many times the phone rang. I got up to 723.
I don't suggest people do that because that can get very annoying.
Really, it did. I mean, you got to start making quicker calls.
You're right. Talk to you later. No, only kidding. Go ahead.
No, but
say what you have to say.
You know, I mean, it's like a really cool show. I've been listening to it for a while, and then like...
Well, we're thinking of splitting it up so that we have one on the left channel, one on the right. We'll get another co-host here, and we'll just go through twice the calls in the same amount of time.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, and then people can just tune to whichever one they like best.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, for, like you know, this, you know, the show really is really swell. I've been listening to it for, like, over, I guess, almost 2 years now.
Uh-huh.
Like, I remember, there's sometimes when you used to be on the air, you used to be begging people to call. You couldn't get one phone call.
Well, that's because we were on a different time slot. And
yeah,
you know,
but I mean, like that. But now you're on a better time slot, and you don't even take any more calls.
Well, actually, we take quite a few calls.
Yeah, well, now, like, I'm like, what, the eighth caller?
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think you're only the seventh. Wait, let me try that again. No, you are the seventh.
Okay, now you have 10 lines, then, with the second line, right?
I think so. I'm not quite sure how many lines we have, because I'm not sure if the next line is actually a line or not.
Right.
We're experimenting with this.
Right. I mean, you know, that's better to have more lines, but you got to take a little quicker calls.
Yeah, you're right. You're definitely right.
Not the last guy. The guy before, he's rambling off for 15 minutes.
Well, you know, I think if more people had interesting things to say, we'd go quicker. But a lot of people, you know, just want to say hello to other people, and, you know, that's not really what we're all about. You know, we want to exchange some ideas and have some controversy. And
question for you.
Arguments and that kind of thing. What?
When you were over in Europe.
Yeah.
Did you think about going to Bhutan?
I thought about it. Of course, Bhutan is on the other side of the world anyway, even if you're over there. It's always on the other side of the world, no matter where you are. You know, the trains running to Bhutan from Holland are very unreliable.
But you know, the
amazing thing is that you can get on a train and eventually wind up in Bhutan.
Why didn't you?
Well, because I had to be back here within 2 weeks, and, you know, it would have been rude to just sort of walk out on the people I was staying with.
Matt was a cool fellow.
Yeah, he was. I listened to him while I was over there.
Yeah, I know. You mentioned that before.
Yeah.
Several times. But, no, like, if you went to Bhutan, you have to meet that screaming operator.
I hope to do that. That's one of my life's ambitions. I try to keep my life's ambitions, you know, kind of low so that I might actually have a chance of fulfilling them. But, yes, the screaming operator Bhutan is definitely high on my list.
Oh, also, wait, dogs really did take over the world. Hold on a minute. Wait, let me get my dog.
Wait, you want to know something about dogs?
Yeah, wait.
I got something to tell you about dogs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In Holland, you know, and in Germany and other places, people can take their dogs on the subway, and everybody does.
Really?
Now, imagine what would happen if you did that in New York. But in those countries, they just come on casually with, like, a little dachshund or whatever, and the dogs behave themselves. They don't freak out. They just sit down on the subway, and, you know, everything's cool.
January 15th, it happened. Dogs took over the world.
January 15th, huh?
It happened, really. There was dogs on subways and stuff. I was in the city on when was a Friday night, and there was dogs on the subways. I walk in, a dog took my ticket from the train. I mean, I was
you don't take tickets on subways.
Train station, and I knocked on the window, and there's a dog there.
Uh-huh.
It's like really crazy.
I see.
It's really, you know, it's. I told you, nobody believed me.
Interesting. You know, I don't know what the condition is called, but when everybody seems to be a dog to you, it means something.
I don't know.
It means something.
I don't know. It may have, like, dogitis or something, but really, it happened.
Uh-huh.
Scary, too.
There's many kinds of dogs in the world. What kind of dogs were these?
They're all types of dogs.
All types, huh?
And one of them, one, like, the small one. Like you ever see, like, gremlins, too, with this really small gremlin person?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of them is really smart, and he said that, like, every type of dog, if you're a mutt or if you're a purebred or anything, they're going to start talking and they're going to take over the world. I think you're going to see Snoopy run for president next year.
Snoopy's not a dog, okay? He's not a dog. I don't know what he is, but he stopped being a dog many years ago.
But he's not a normal dog.
I mean, dogs walk on 4 feet, okay? Snoopy does not walk on 4 feet. He walks on 2 feet.
But Odie and Garfield walks on 4 feet.
Well, sort of, I guess. So they're more dogish and catish.
But then again, hermits have no peer pressure.
True. Well, I guess we could talk about this for hours. Let me just ask you one particular question here. Would one type of dog have more authority over another, say a Chihuahua or a Great Dane or something like that?
I don't know. It's hard to tell, but like I think the German Shepherd will be number one breed.
Why is that?
Just because they're like they're police dogs. You know, that you're gonna see the canine cops, the actual humans are gonna be walking around on chains, and you see the German Shepherds driving the cars and keeping the cops as pets.
Well, that's quite a positive view of the future of our society.
I think by the end of the decade, by the turn of the century, we're gonna be the pets.
Okay. Well, you're certainly giving us something to look forward to.
They're going to be the ones in the doghouse.
All right. Well, we'll
yeah, right here first. I'm brain damaged.
Okay, you certainly did. And write that down so we'll get some sort of residual in the future. Thanks for calling. 632-6901 or 632-6500. Okay, this is a line I'm not sure about. Now, it's this is either going to be a person or it's going to be a dial tone. So I think it's going to be a dial tone. So I'm going to pick this line up. And if it's dial tone, we'll just simply try to forget about it and go on to the next call. Good evening, you're on the air. Hello? Hello. It's a dial tone, I think. Yes, it's a dial tone. Okay, so we won't take that one, but we will take this line. Good morning.
Are you a fat, bloated bull?
All right. Good morning. Hello? I'm sorry, but we can't take whispering. We have to take voices. Good morning.
Yes. I want to ask you a question.
Okay, you come to the right place.
Say the year is 1996.
The year is 1996.
Dan Quayle is the Republican nominee for president. Mario Cuomo is the Democratic nominee. Who do you vote for?
Oh, gosh. Can I vote now?
Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. Have you ever met anybody that said they would vote for Dan Quayle?
Yes, lots of people.
Really? And what is the reason they give?
Well, over a Democrat, they would definitely vote for him.
Over a Democrat?
Cuomo's done with New York. He's done a terrible job.
Cuomo's done a terrible job with New York? Well, now, Quayle hasn't had a state to mess up, has he?
No, but...
Well, why don't we give Quayle a state and see what he does with that, and then we'll be in a better position to judge him, I guess.
Look at Clinton. Look at what he's done with Arkansas. It's the worst state in the union.
Arkansas? I don't really know much about Arkansas, actually, to be honest.
It's going to be Dan Quayle. He's going to be president in 1996.
Well, okay. Instead of telling me what's bad about Cuomo and Clinton, tell me what's good about Quayle.
Well, he's smart. The New Washington Post had good reviews about him. He's smart. He's crafty, and he knows what to do in situations.
Well, what you're giving me here is very general, smart, crafty. I mean, give me specifics. You know, what has he accomplished?
He is almost solely responsible for that Patriot missile years ago when he was a senator. He fought to keep that thing alive.
Well, now I hear the Patriot missile was a 90% failure over there. That's what they're saying in the papers now, that
no.
Most of the time it missed.
No, it missed once.
I heard it missed most of the time.
No.
And that the reason why the Scuds were destroyed was because they were inferior to start with, and they destroyed themselves.
No, that's not true.
Well, that's what all the media is reporting. I mean, you don't know who to believe. They tell you one thing one year, and then they tell you something completely different the next year.
I know. The media is getting on George Bush's case, and he's doing a good job.
Well, let me tell you something. The media should always be on administration's case. They really should.
Yep,
That goes for national media. That goes for local media. It goes for media here at the State University at Stony Brook. It should always be critical of the people in power. I think it's their responsibility.
I think it's their responsibility to tell the truth.
Yeah. Oh, certainly. Tell the truth, never lie, but always assume that those people in power are not telling you the truth. Always assume that and set out to prove it one way or the other.
But they are.
But I think the danger is when you have a media, and this is how I think it is now, you have a media that simply swallows whatever it's told and doesn't really go out and question the issues. Instead tries to look for headlines like who's having affairs with who.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's who benefits from that?
Yeah, like right after the... during the war, the media got a lot of ratings because of the war, and people watched. Then after the war was gone, they didn't get too much ratings. So then they made this whole thing up about the economy and how bad it is, and every single night, you see.
They made it up?
Well, it's not as bad as it seems.
I think it's worse than it's being reported as. I mean, just driving around today, you see all the stores out of business, all the stores that are burning down because...
I can't see one single change from 5 years ago.
You can't?
Oh.
I don't know. Do you have a car?
No.
If you drive around Long Island, you'll see all the stores that are empty now. And I'll tell you something else that really annoys me is that they continue, even after all this, they continue to build new shopping centers and malls and things like that, even after all these stores are going out of business. I mean, what kind of sense, what kind of logic is that?
To get jobs out.
Well,
jobs.
Why don't they use the jobs to rebuild the stores that... you know, are abandoned, or to fill it up with something that people are going to go to? What's the point of building these useless buildings that nobody's going to go to? They're just going to lie there.
They'll go to them.
Well, they're not going to the ones that we have now.
That's because they're terrible.
They're terrible?
When they build the new ones, people like that, and they go there.
I can't understand what is terrible about the stores we have now. I mean, they all seem the same, for one thing.
Yeah, but like when you go like to Kmart, and all these new stores are opening around Long Island... when you go to them, they have all these new concession stands, and the store is much bigger, and all that stuff.
Well, whatever improvements you think can be made to existing structures. You don't have to tear down more forest and build more stores when you have plenty of empty space already.
When you create more stores, you create more jobs.
Yeah, but you also destroy more of the environment.
We have so much natural resources.
I don't know if you've checked recently, but we have a very dwindling supply of natural resources.
That's because the birth rate has gone up, especially in places like Latin America. They don't use birth control.
How are you going to blame Latin America for Long Island being destroyed? I don't follow that at all.
Take all of the natural resources from around the world. I mean, America has one of the lowest birth rates in the world. And it's not our fault, it's the other country's fault. Like China, there's so many people there.
I don't think we can blame anybody but ourselves for what's happening inside this country. I'm sorry, I just don't see that.
You can blame Japan.
I don't think we can blame Japan because they're doing a better job at what we're supposed to be doing. I don't think so.
Well, they're not giving us fair markets in their country.
Well, that should be changed. I agree there. I agree that they should...
they're causing
the problem. They should allow us to sell more things, but... I'll be honest with you, they don't make cars for Japanese drivers in this country. They don't make... I mean, the Japanese physique is slightly different than the American physique. Everybody knows that.
Huh.
We don't model cars to fit that standard. We model cars for American standards. I don't think anybody in Detroit makes a car with the steering wheel on the right side, which is how they drive over there. So if we don't make cars that they'll want to buy, how can we expect them to buy cars that we make?
We do make some cars like that. I mean, they don't drive Cadillacs or something like that, but they can drive small Fords or Dodge, whatever.
Uh-huh. I'm puzzled as to why Japan doesn't allow us greater freedom to sell things, but I'm not convinced that if they did do that, that all of a sudden the Japanese would start buying American things.
They don't practice free trade. We do. Because they don't let us... all the other European countries, they only 16% of products that come into there or be sold in there are Japanese, and we don't do that. We're 100% free trade.
Well, you see, I think you know, it's wrong that they don't allow us to sell as much as we allow them to sell. But keep in mind, Japan is smaller than the United States, and I think the major problem is that Japan has made such an inroad into this country. And why is that? Because people in this country believe that their products are better than American products. Why is that? That's the question that should be asked.
American products are better. We have the best products in the world.
I don't think that's true anymore.
It is.
I just don't see that. I don't see that. I don't see the same reliability, the same economy. I'm talking about cars here, but I don't see, you know, the same kind of productivity that comes out of places like Japan.
I know, but you see, we're starting an economic cold war with Japan.
Uh-huh.
It's already started. And
yeah, I see Japan bashing everywhere. You know, it's that's not a healthy way to deal with it. I think we've got to be diplomatic about this. After all, we created this new Japan.
Out of
World War II. We you know, helped them get into capitalism, and they did a much better job than we expected them to.
That was the worst thing we ever did, was the Marshall Plan.
Well, what would you have done?
I would have just left them alone. And
what do you think would have happened?
What? They would be a country like Cambodia or something like that, or Vietnam.
You think so?
Yes. We just helped them. We gave them so much money. We set up their new government and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Now look at them, they're the powerhouse of the world, economically.
Well, I tell you, I'd rather have an economic powerhouse than a military powerhouse.
They are becoming a military powerhouse. They're starting to become one. They have all these, they're buying weapons now from all over the world and stuff like that.
Well, we have to keep an eye on military situations. That's what concerns me more than anything economic.
And that guy talking before about the dogs, can't you see he was telling you that the dogs are going to run the world, and you weren't getting it. He was just fooling with you.
No, he wasn't. He was serious.
No, he was the dogs in the ticket window and the cops as pets.
Yeah, he was serious.
Serious.
I thought he was serious.
He wasn't. He was just fooling around with you. He calls every single...
No, everybody here seems to think he was serious, too.
What?
Now, you see, what you have to understand, okay, this is the marvelous thing about America... Nobody sees things in quite the same way. I mean, you might see a dog, someone else might see a cat. You might see red, someone else will see green, which is inconvenient at intersections, but it's true. It's, you know, it's just, we all have different interpretations.
No, but he was really fooling with you.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, that might be your interpretation, but I believe he was being honest with me.
If that guy calls back, then he'll explain it.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will. Thanks for calling. It's, you know, it's healthy to have criticism, I suppose, but we don't need that around here. 632-6901 or 632-6500. Yes, speaking of malls, listen to this, folks. Undaunted by a judge's ruling that appeared to sack his controversial shopping, office, and housing development in Yaphank's Pine Barrens, Yaphank being out east on Long Island, developer Wilbur Breslin said he plans to submit a final draft of an environmental study he says will satisfy the court and clear the way for Brookhaven Town to approve the project. You know, this has been hanging over our heads now for God knows how many years, that they want to build this shopping mall, this huge shopping mall out east where there's still trees and fields and wildlife of various sorts. But no, we need a mall now. We need yet another mall. It's the most insane thing. We've been fighting this one for such a long time, and we're going to have to do it all over again. But it's got to be done, and I hope people out there who care do something about this. What can you do? You can write letters, talk to your county legislator, talk to your your state representatives, your national representatives. Talk to everybody. Make a fuss. Because when you make a fuss about something, things get done. Things do happen. Look at the JFK issue. Okay, we were talking about that a couple of weeks ago. The JFK documents may actually be released. It might actually happen. And why? Because of public pressure. Because of a film that was made that led to public pressure. Instead of releasing documents in 2030, they may release them this year. It's quite possible. So, yes, you can do it. People power does work, even in this country. So, do you want a mall? Do you want another mall in Long Island? Do we need another mall out east? Do you think people moved out east so that eventually a mall will be built around them? Or do you think they moved out east to get away from all the malls that are popping up everywhere? You know, it's even in the relatively short time I've been out here, it's incredible the difference, the differences that have occurred in the landscape and in the shrinking of greenery. Because we realize, you know, every time you you knock down a forest, there isn't a forest being planted somewhere. It's one less forest, period. Doesn't get replaced. You know, we're on an island here. It's a shrinking island. I was driving around today looking for a furniture store of all things. You know, I don't often do things like that. And I found three that were out of business. Well, I'm including one that burned down, but three altogether out of about five. And there's something wrong with that. And these are pretty big ones, too, you know, big warehouse-type places that were only built a couple of years ago. But they're empty now, completely empty. But does that stop the lunatics from building something else across the street? Someone's got to step in and be a little bit sane here. Anyway, the spokesman for this lunatic that wants to build a shopping mall out east, Hank Berner is a spokesman, he said, yes.
And I'm sure they wouldn't keep building it. But I do agree with you on what you said about rebuilding the old shopping centers instead of building new ones.
It makes sense, you know. I don't know why they don't do that. Why do they let stores be vacant for years and they just keep building new things over, you know, unspoiled land? Well, I mean, I know why. It's because somebody else owns the land. They sell it to somebody else who wants to make a profit off of it. And meanwhile, the poor sucker that rented space on the first plot is out of business, and there's nothing that can be done for that person.
Yeah, because you would have a lot of work. I mean, you know, especially the, you know, the sheetrockers, the electricians, the, you know, the construction workers. They'd all be doing, you know, old work renovations.
Sure.
You'd have, you know, I mean, if it wasn't for sometimes new construction, you know, the unemployment rate would be higher than it already is.
Well, I mean, some construction is inevitable, obviously, but there's only so much you can build in a finite area, and we live in a finite area here. I mean, you can build up, but I don't see us doing that on Long Island very much. So I would say the best bet for jobs and continued construction and all that is to work on what we have already, which is plenty.
Exactly.
Rebuilding, you know, and tearing things down and building new things in their place. I have no trouble with that.
Because, I mean, you know, you put up new materials, I mean, it's really not a big deal. And plus, you'll keep apprentices working and, you know, people have opportunities for new jobs, like now.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've been looking for a job for, you know, months. I'm out of work, you know.
What's your line of work?
In electrical field.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the thing is, you know, I'm just starting. I'm an apprentice, kind of. You know, and there's no work. You know, nothing's being built, and I can't get into the union. You know, but the thing, they should renovate the, you know, old shopping centers, like you said.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if people in your position look upon environmentalists as people that stand in their way, but they're really not, I don't think. I think they're people that are concerned about the global picture about how things are going to be in 20 years. And, you know, it might be fine and dandy if people get jobs right now, but what's going to happen to the people 20 years from now when there really is no more space and there's nothing else that can be done? And I think that solution, when you look at the broader picture, is better for everybody in the long run. And it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you'll be out of work.
Yeah, well, I think sometimes environmentalists are a bunch of clowns because, you know, they're the same people that are turning around and saying, you know, recycle this and I recycle, you know. But, you know, these are probably the same people that throw the gum wrappers and the cigarette butts all over the floor, you know.
Well, there's hypocrites in every camp, I'll give you that.
Oh, there's just like, you know, a little racism in everybody.
Right.
A little bit, you know.
But recycling is a good example. I mean, that's something that we said couldn't be done only a couple of years ago. Now everybody's doing it, and we're still alive, and we're doing it fine.
Yeah.
It was easy to adjust, and the benefits are incredible.
And plus, you know, it's helping out the homeless. You know, they get the 5 cent refund on the cans, you know.
To a degree, I guess it does help. I don't know if
it really helps
substantially.
Tax-free dollars, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but, you know, that's good.
Uh-huh.
I just want to say one more thing.
Go ahead.
How you doing, Greg Groovy? How you doing, Monica and everybody else?
Okay, thanks for sharing that with us. 632-6901 is our telephone number, and we also have 632-6500 open for your convenience. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Mohammed Abdul Malik Shabazz Davis.
Well, that's quite a mouthful there. How do you get around on your driver's license with that?
I don't know, it's hard.
Yeah.
What do you think about Mike Tyson? You think he's guilty?
You know, that's interesting. I don't know if he's guilty or not, but I got a question. Why is it that this story, this rape trial, always appears on the sports page? I mean, it's a rape trial. It's not a sporting event, so it should be in the news section. It should be in the sports section.
Right.
I mean, that in itself tells me that the media is not exactly approaching this from a very neutral point of view here. They're looking upon the whole thing as a circus.
Oh, it's weird. I just don't understand it. It's weird. I don't know. I don't think he's guilty, but, you know, he probably did something, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm sure something happened. Now, whether or not the person that it happened with is an opportunist, it just feels that this is a good way to, you know, make money or something like that, or if he's taking advantage of his fame and hiding behind that to abuse people, I don't know. But I think you got to look at the character of both the accused and the accuser and figure it out.
Even if he does go to prison, they say that he still might have a chance to fight Holyfield.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess if Holyfield gets sent up for something, they could wind up in the same prison. Then they can get into a brawl.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, anything's possible.
Oh, God, I'm still sorry for that guy that didn't get to get his phone number out there. Sorry, Lou.
Oh, yeah.
I know who that was.
That's too bad, but he's somewhere out there in Mastic, right?
Yeah, sure.
Surely, whatever.
What was I going to say? I just like to say that Team Smile rules and Team Dinkleberry really stinks.
Okay, well, thanks for clearing that up for us. We had some concern about that. 632-6901, good morning. All right, that closes up another line. Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for asking.
All right. Nick, I was talking about the Japanese people, not the people, but the government.
Right.
Not competing fairly in the economic thing.
Right.
I think he's kind of misled because we're also having incredible sanctions on Japanese vehicles coming into this country.
Do we?
Yeah, we. I think it's like 33% on trucks.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's a tariff on cars, too, but I just know about trucks because it's on some truck magazine.
But it's not equal to what they do to us, is it?
Well, I'm not sure what they're doing to us.
Yeah, I should read up on this some more because I'm not 100% certain myself.
Well, they said, I don't know, but 33% seems to be a whole lot. And I'm sure that the truck company ain't paying for it. I'm pretty sure that we're paying for it.
Oh, yeah, of course. We'll wind up paying for it in the end.
You guys going on about how the American product is so much better.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to say that, but it's not true.
Right. I think that's what it boils down to. You know, we have to ask ourselves why that is. Or why do you think that is? Why do you think we're not producing things as well as either we used to or as well as other people are now?
I don't think that we're using our technology as well as they are.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you sit there, you see a Nissan put out a car that can beat a Corvette with an engine with two less cylinders and about 100 less cubic inches.
Uh-huh.
It could beat the car, so why can't Chevy go around making a car like that?
Good question. You know, I don't know why we don't seem to be moving ahead. Like, okay. why haven't we gone back to the moon? You know, why haven't we started exploration of the solar system? You know, all these things that we were into at one point, we just seem to have, you know, stopped. And that's unhealthy. You have to always keep moving forward, and not just moving forward militarily, which we've certainly done,
yeah,
but all kinds of ways.
They love putting money into that Star Wars program, don't they?
Yeah, they sure do. All kinds of, you know, military maneuvers.
I don't know. I asked my parents this a long time ago. I was a little kid. It's like, how come we didn't go to the moon again, you know? We went there like twice and that was that.
Uh-huh. We got bored, and we shouldn't have gotten bored with that. We should be over there exploring it.
There's got to be something there.
There is. There's all kinds of things everywhere. And we need to be out there finding it.
and explore an entire planet in two trips.
No, you can't explore anything in two trips, that's for sure.
They're going on the wrong side. There might have been, like, whole civilizations on the other side.
Well, I don't know about that. It is kind of a vacuum, but, you know, there's a lot to learn from even a, you know, a rock in space.
Completely off the subject.
Yeah.
There's some sort of class to get a radio show over there, right?
Yes, we have a training class here at the radio station.
My friend called up about it, and me and him were thinking about going down there and taking it.
Uh-huh.
And all he found out was February 18th.
Uh-huh.
Multiple day thing, or is it just one day?
I don't have the information here, but what I suggest you do is leave a message on our phone mail account, and that's 632-6498. 6498.
All right,
and leave a message, somebody will call you back.
Thanks a lot.
All right. 632-6901, 632-6500 are the two lines we have open tonight for brain damage. Good morning, you're on the air. Anybody there? No, I guess not. All right, well, while we take a pause at 1:43 in the morning, let's take a look at something interesting here. Largest consolidations and failures in the U.S. airline industry since deregulation in 1979. Now, TWA just yesterday went bankrupt. I mean, what's going on here? Everyone's going bankrupt and going out of business. Check this out. America West filed for bankruptcy protection early in 1991. They continue to fly. Braniff ceased operations in 1989 after two bankruptcy filings, so Braniff is no more. Continental filed for bankruptcy in 1990. They continue to operate. Eastern filed for bankruptcy in 1989, stopped flying in early 1991, so no more Eastern Airlines. Frontier merged with People Express in 1985, and People Express was then absorbed by Continental in 1987. Midway ceased operations in 1991, so no more Midway. New York Air merged with Continental in 1987. Ozark, acquired by TWA in 1986, and of course TWA is now bankrupt. Pacific Southwest, acquired by U.S. Air in 1988. Pan Am filed for bankruptcy early in 1991, ceased operations later that year, so Pan Am is gone. Piedmont was acquired by U.S. Air in 1989. Republic merged with Northwest in 1986. TWA filed for bankruptcy yesterday. They continue to fly for now. And Western merged with Delta in 1987. So the airlines are all messed up. Completely messed up. I don't even know what to say about that. But if you believe the economy is in good shape, take one good look at that and that'll tell you something different. Either that or drive down Jericho Turnpike and count the number of abandoned stores. Okay, how about this? Let's turn to prudishness in the United States. Josef Schützenhofer may not be a name to rival those of Robert Mapplethorpe and Andre Serrano, the provocateurs who brought down the wrath of conservatives in Congress on the National Endowment for the Arts 2 years ago, but Mr. Schützenhofer has stirred up a rumpus that the residents of Frederick, Maryland are not likely to forget very soon. His satirical prize-winning mural depicting President Bush and Dolly Parton nude with Senator Jesse Helms and General Norman Schwarzkopf in Roman armor, and President Saddam Hussein of Iraq kneeling on a prayer rug, has been featured in the two local newspapers virtually every day since the work went on exhibit at the Delaplein Visual Arts Center on January 18th. In an editorial at the time, the jointly owned newspapers described the painting as inappropriate for a conservative town like Frederick, but defended the right of the art gallery to show it. The town is divided just about 50-50 over the painting, said Michael Powell, managing editor of both the Morning Frederick Post and the Afternoon News. The newspapers are owned by the Delaplein family, which donated the money to found the Arts Center 6 years ago. I guess this is a very small town. Both newspapers are owned by the same people who also own the Arts Center that this is taking place in. Mr. Schützenhofer's name became a household word in Frederick when the Arts Center put his four-panel, 12-by-5.5-foot mural on display and announced that a jury of three had chosen it, along with another entry, as the first prize winner in a show of 31 regional artists called Right Down to the Roots. Mr. Schützenhofer, a citizen of Austria who lives in Dallastown, Pennsylvania, said the work was frankly political. It's based on a Rubens sketch called The Peace Treaty of 1630, in which Rubens was dealing with the British fighting the Spaniards in Flanders. So I called my work A Peace Treaty and a New World Order. Yesterday, the heat from Frederick, which is 55 miles northwest of Washington, was felt in Annapolis, where the Frederick County delegation and the state legislature voted unanimously to reverse course and not submit a plan bill to authorize a matching grant of $500,000 for the Delaplaine Visual Arts Center. With all the publicity and everything, said a delegation staff member who spoke on condition of anonymity, we just decided it would be better to ask for the $500,000 next year. I'll be honest with you, in various places overseas, that would not make a bit of difference. You know, I mean, showing famous people nude or pretending to be nude or whatever, it's just no big deal. And in fact, that's something we keep coming back to. All these things that we get so concerned about, all these controversial issues, and I put that in quotes, are really no big deal. You know, it's abortion considered a right in so many parts of the world. So many parts. And here we still just keep arguing the same points over and over again, and never getting anywhere. It's no big deal. This is how things are done in various parts of the world. And how we want to do things is up to us, of course, but we just seem to always be stepping on the same ground and never actually stepping forward. Okay. We're going to take a couple more phone calls in the time we have left. 632-6901 and 632-6500. Two phone numbers that we have tonight. And we've got another 12 minutes. Let's see who's out there. Good morning.
How you doing?
Okay.
First, I want to mention this country's definitely decaying, you know, as it is right now. But it's still definitely the economic power of the world. I mean, this country has... The GMP is twice of Japan's.
Yeah, we've got so much potential.
Oh, yeah. And the study that came out of the UN says the United States has the number one standard of living in the world. Where, you know, I don't think it's too late to turn the tide right now, because we do have immense, you know, GMP. And I think if we started taking that money... They're taking it from defense now and putting it where, you know, into rebuilding a transportation system and building new roads and bridges and,
right.
You know, getting everything together, I think.
Yeah, you got the right idea. Transportation is the thing that we really should be working on. Over in Europe, you know, it's so easy to get from point A to point B because the public transportation works so well, and it's always, always on time. You can look at a clock, and by the way, they have clocks everywhere, which is something we don't even have here, and all the clocks tell the same time because they're synchronized. Trains arrive within 60 seconds of when they're supposed to arrive without fail, and they leave on time, and people count on them, and that's the way it should be.
I was in Germany, right?
I was in Germany and Holland.
Yeah, I toured, you know, with a band. Over Europe. The trains. I was there last October. At the Oktoberfest. The trains in the subways. The trains run so smooth, so brilliantly.
Oh yeah.
It's ridiculous. They're just incredible. Then you go on a train in New York. It's just like rickety crickety. You know. Down the rails.
Yeah, it's the ride is so much smoother. And the rails are maintained so much better. You don't see all these abandoned rails and old cars that are rotting away. It's clean. It's kept up. Now, okay, you want to have jobs for people. There's jobs, you know. Keep the place maintained. But if you don't keep things maintained, it becomes dilapidated and everybody just sort of has a bad attitude towards it.
I mean, what are they doing? We have the largest GMP in the world. It's twice as Japan's.
Uh-huh.
And what are we doing with all this freaking money we have? I mean... We could be building new bridges, new roads, and I just feel that it's mismanagement by the government that is just putting us in this situation, totally.
I have to agree. It's something that should be looked upon on a national scale.
And I think, you know, there definitely should be some kind of economic storm. You know, they did it, you know, There's a storm, whatever. They should some kind of economic storm, because I just feel, hey, this is the future of America, right?
Right. The worst thing we can do, though, and I see a lot of people doing this, the worst thing we can do is to look upon the people that are doing what we are not doing as the enemy. And why is that? They're doing what they should be doing. They're doing it right. We should be doing it the same way.
They're doing it brilliantly. I mean, Japan is definitely becoming the envy now, because even though they live horribly in Japan, I mean, it's almost impossible to buy a car there. There's no room, and the living conditions are horrible, because there's no room, so, there's no space. But, if they come over to live here, they can buy three houses for the money, then they get the jobs.
Uh-huh.
So the yen is so high, so it's frozen value.
And we benefit from it, too. I mean, make no mistake about that. We were able to buy computers for our personal use at good prices and, make our businesses flourish because of the computers that we have. So we are able to benefit. It's not like they're getting everything and we're getting nothing.
I don't think protectionism is such a bad thing,
To a degree.
I just feel that, if they're just dumping all the cars they make here in America. I also think it's the Americans, too. I mean, you have the Americans saying, America first, this and that, and the next day they go out and buy a Toyota.
Well, I read an interesting piece. I think this was in the Times. I saw it in the International Herald Tribune when I was overseas, about somebody who was trying to buy an American car. And they went to, the Dodge and the Pontiac places or whatever, and the people there were not interested in helping them. They wouldn't suggest test driving the car. They were more interested in talking about, the sports scores with their coworkers. They just didn't care. Whereas when they went over to the Nissan dealership, people were really interested in showing them cars. And despite the fact that they tried to buy American, they really did. They wanted to order a car, but the car wasn't in. They had to wait several weeks to get a car in. Whereas with a Nissan dealership or whatever, they were able to get something the next day. If you don't try, you'll lose the customer.
And that's
a basic premise.
I mean, where's the American industrial spirit go? I mean, there is Europe's not becoming European; they're becoming American. They're totally Americanized. America used to be, and Japan is Americanized.
Yeah, and I don't see very many people here complaining when you have McDonald's opening all over the place. We're not complaining. There they have McDonald's every place, so I think they're very open to our culture. But what are we getting in return? We're not getting, their fast food franchises, because they really don't have any, but we are getting something else. And we shouldn't be critical of that. We should be learning from that.
I'm just really distraught about it, because I just think, we're just blowing this country down the tubes. First of all, I voted for George Bush last time. I'm not going to vote for him this time.
Uh-huh. Do you think a lot of people will say the same thing?
I think so. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, he's just a waste of a president. I mean, he absolutely did nothing this almost 4 years he's been in the White House. I mean, he absolutely did nothing. He just waited till now to do something about the economy. What happened 4 years ago?
I think he's in for a rude awakening.
I'll vote for Clinton over him any day, think, I just want someone, a president that's going to come in, and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to get this country together, and we're really going to, we're really going to work. And the only problem I see with America now than in the 40s is I think that it, in a way, its diversity may harm it than help it now.
How so?
Well, I think that this country is just becoming so multicultural that, no one understands each other,
No, I don't think that's true. I think people understand each other as much as they want to understand each other. And you can have as many cultures as you want. If there's an interest in that, in the people around you, you'll learn about their culture, and you'll be the better for it.
I just feel there has to be a clampdown in this country, First, the borders have to be shut automatically. This Mexican borders. First of all, I'm not blaming, Latin Americans for our problems, no way. But I think they're hindering us more than helping us. They're coming in, and they, where they're getting a job, getting these jobs that should Americans basically should get, you know? I mean, I have a friend that wants to get a job in a warehouse and can't get a job there. I mean, because he wants, you know, get a little side work. He can't get a job because all the jobs are taken up by Latin Americans.
Uh-huh.
And I think, and another thing, this speaking Spanish thing has got to go, you know?
I don't see why. I mean, what's wrong with speaking Spanish?
You know what it is? It's they want to learn Spanish. They want to keep speaking Spanish. They don't want to learn English. I mean, I'm all for learning all languages, you know, learning, you know, three different languages in school like other countries do. But if these immigrants want to come to this country and not learn the language, you know, I mean, what's the purpose of that?
Well, I don't think anybody should be encouraged not to learn.
Yeah.
I think, you know, people who come here should definitely be encouraged to learn English, but I also think that we, on the other hand, should be encouraged to learn other languages as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And we're not, you know. I think that's a bigger problem, the fact that we're not able to communicate with people around the world.
No, we're not. But, you know, I just, you know, and another thing that bothers me, you know, basically, is the, you know, the plight of the Black American, you know. I feel, you know, black Americans brought greatness to this country as far as music and arts and entertainment and everything like that. And maybe they haven't had a chance to bring themselves as far as, you know, economics or what have you. But, I mean, what do you think the plight is of Black America? I mean, I think, that if this country really wants to get going, Black America has to get going, you know?
Well, I agree that Black America does have to get going, but, you know, white America's got to change a few things, too, to you know, clear the path a little bit, because there's still a lot of resentment that shouldn't be there, you know? And we've made progress. We most definitely have made progress, but there's still a surprising amount of progress that has yet to be made.
You know, I just don't understand the argument where, you know, some of these black activists are old. White America wants to keep black men down, you know, this and that, blah, blah, blah.
Well, they're speaking in generalities, you know, and, of course, generalities are not going to be true in most cases, I don't think, anyway, but enough cases to be significant.
But that's ridiculous, you know. Any time you keep a race down, there's always going to be crime in that race and this and that. Who the hell wants to walk down the street and worry about getting shot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know what it is? I think that is one of the big problems in this country as far as facing, you know, dealing with Black America. Because, first of all, they definitely, as a race, they feel completely separated from white America.
Right, and it's not hard to feel separated, especially when something so obvious as color.
Right, yeah.
Because you're judged immediately. You're judged immediately by the way you look. So if immediately you're relegated to a lower position, of course people are going to feel the effects of that.
And
maybe even to the point of paranoia, you know?
And I think, you know, I think perhaps white America should open its arms a little more and as far as the government should really get into these ghettos and just clean it up and, you know, start straightening everything out and getting a better educational system happening. But also, that 80% of black children are born into illegitimate households.
Right.
Where, you know, that's not a good thing either, you know? So I feel it has to be on both sides. This thing can be, you know, has to be, worked out, you know. You can't say, well, you know, we want this, we want that, we want this. But still, these kids are growing up without any fathers are using the house, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, it's not going to be worked out through, you know, more bitterness and misunderstandings and things like that, obviously.
And that's the thing, you know. No matter how, you know, no matter how long, you know, no matter what I think white America gives to black America is going to still have bitterness towards they were enslaved, mad. You know,
yeah, it's going to take time to heal. It's not going to heal overnight, certainly.
But
I think it is getting better.
Yeah, and another thing is, too, when people talk about the educational system in this country, and they say, oh, you got to dump more money into it, this and that. I think that's going a little overboard, because in Sweden, they spend most amount of money of the old industrial countries per pupil in Sweden, and they have,
right.
they have the lowest test scores in science and math.
Yeah.
Country.
Listen, sir, I'm afraid I'm going to have to run. All right?
All right, all right.
Thanks so much for calling, though.
All right, great.
Truth is, I think there's somebody at the door, so what I'm going to do is, if there's somebody at the door, I'm going to come right back. If not, I'll come right back, too, but I have to... I'll put on this music for a few seconds while I see what's going on here. I think I'm the only person here right now, but there's supposed to be somebody coming on at 2, and it's 2 minutes after 2, so I presume this is the person at the door, so I'll be right back. Okay, folks, that was somebody at the door. In fact, Paul Weissman is here, and he's ready to begin with his particular style of radio. So, afraid all you people, and there's a lot of you online here that didn't quite make it. Well, I feel really bad about that. Look at all these people. Look at all of them. It's so sad. But don't consider it an evening wasted, you know, being on the phone ringing it for half an hour. But there's no way we can get to everybody all the time. No one's to blame. But there's always next week. And we'll see you then. We're going to go out with something from The Clash, as we are prone to do here at this particular point in time. A live version of Lightning Strikes, not once, but twice. And again, we'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Paul Now. And everybody, have a fun week.
Chile will tell the cries of the tortured men. Remember the name the day before the army came. Please remember Victor Jara in the Santiago Stadium. Ever die. Oh, Washington won it again. And in the playoff stakes in 1961, a banner for the playboy and the Cuban sun. For Castro is the color, is the redder than red. For Washington bullets, one Castro dead. For Castro is the color, the color of his playoff lead. What he thinks of voting for me. Off the Dalai Lama and the hills of Tibet. How many months did the Chinese get in a war-torn swamp of any mercenary? Check the British bullets in his armor.